from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump has doubled down on his call for a foreign government to investigate his political rival, Joe Biden. Speaking to reporters outside the White House today, Trump called on China.
China should start an investigation into the Biden, because what happened to China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine.
This comes as House Democrats step up the impeachment inquiry and vow to subpoena the White House tomorrow if it doesn't release requested documents. Joining us to discuss the latest in impeachment news and a new poll on California voters is Marisa Lagos. She's here with us in studio, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown. Welcome, Marisa.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Marisa. Nancy Cook also joining us, White House reporter for Politico. Nancy Cook, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, let me begin, if I may, with you, Nancy, and let's talk about what we are able to discern from this latest statement by the president, that China ought to be brought into the picture.
Basically, the president is saying out loud what he said privately during his call with the Ukrainian president, and that he's sort of asking a foreign government to get involved in investigating a political rival. And it was a pretty stunning moment. He did this at the White House. He said that both China and Ukraine should look into the Bidens. And it's remarkable. The China aspect is particularly remarkable because the U.S. government is in the middle of this trade war with China and these standoffs over the tariffs. And so, you know, while they're negotiating all of these various trade tariffs and packages and deals, he's also just publicly asking China to look into someone who he feels very vulnerable to heading into the 2020 election.
Sort of reminiscent of, are you listening, Russia, about Hillary's emails and all that?
Yeah, it's sort of similar to that. And it's just interesting because, the White House released this transcript in which he asked the Ukrainian president to, you know, do him a favor. And now he's sort of saying it publicly. And so it will be hard, I think, for the White House to say that, you know, he didn't say that or he didn't actually make that request. He's making it publicly now.
And I've also asked to ask you, we had Kurt Volker testifying today. What do we learn from that?
Well, I think that we're still, we're still figuring out exactly what we learned there. But one interesting thing that did happen is, you know, Adam Schiff, the head of the Intelligence Committee on the Hill, just talked about Trump's comments on Ukraine and China. And he said Trump violated his oath of office by asking China and Ukraine to investigate. So I think that there's, you know, real pushback from the Hill on this.
He's also, Marisa, going after Adam Schiff big time, talking about him as being someone who should, using words like treason and
right.
prosecutions, and he should essentially be removed from office, all of those kinds of things, this rather steeped-up rhetoric that we're used to from the president. What's the effect it's having?
Well, I mean, that's the irony to me is, like, I think the Nancy Pelosi attacks make a little more sense politically. Pelosi, as we all know, is one of, you know, it appears in more ads than almost anybody else during, you know, a midterm like last year, largely Republicans attacking her and often Democrats trying to keep arms distance. Schiff is a different character, right? He is a very sort of muted former prosecutor. He is methodical. He is, I know I've talked to him about it, a little surprised by his own sort of celebrity over the last few years because of the Russia investigation first and now, of course, this. You can really see how Schiff gets under Trump's skin yesterday during the press conference that Pelosi and Schiff were holding. Before it was even over, the president was attacking both of them on Twitter, sort of went off the rails a little bit, like as you said, over essentially Schiff, you know, summarizing his view of what was said on that Ukraine call back in July. And as you said, the president, you know, was not happy that he was summarizing it instead of reading the transcript exactly and called on him to be tried for treason, which, of course, is, I believe, his First Amendment right probably to say anything he wants.
Well, he did say that he did not meet with the whistleblower, and it turned out that he did meet with the whistleblower, and so we have that that the president has been thumping, and we also have the fact that Pompeo also lied or certainly said something about to the effect that he wasn't involved in that phone call, and he was involved in that phone call. So we've got, you know, both sides really giving prevarications and, you know, using it as.
I'm not sure. Did Schiff actually? I know that we know the whistleblower went to staff at the Intelligence Committee.
I believe. Is that right, Nancy Cook? Didn't Adam Schiff at first say no? He didn't meet with the whistleblower?
Adam Schiff said he didn't meet with the whistleblower. My understanding of the New York Times reporting on this is basically that the whistleblower became concerned that the CIA was not taking his internal complaints seriously. So the whistleblower went to a staffer on the House Intelligence Committee who urged him to file a formal complaint through the whistleblower process. I have no knowledge of the whistleblower meeting with Schiff personally.
But in the meantime, Marisa, Schiff is, because of the statements coming from the President of the United States, and he doesn't have a security detail like Pelosi, I mean, he's really vulnerable here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Nancy might know more about this than I do, but, you know, I think in any case, when you have a sitting lawmaker, whether it be at the state or federal level, you do have, you know, Capitol Police and other people who are responsible for protecting, say, the speaker. And I would assume that if there are actual threats being made that they find concerning, that they might potentially give him a detail too, or some sort of protection. But I think that generally you're right. I mean, the rhetoric has been so nasty. And I think that there is, you know, this is all just started really in a way. And I mean, given that the president just this morning obviously called on China publicly to investigate, I mean, he seems to be in some ways digging himself further into the hole. If you think that what he did in July was inappropriate, I can't imagine that trying, you know, publicly calling for a country that we are in a trade war with and they're meeting this week over is going to go over any better to Democrats. And I think that, you know, I would expect Schiff to do what he knows how to do. You know, he is a former prosecutor. He understands the way that you sort of lay out an investigation. And really, that's what we've seen him doing for the last few years. And so I don't expect him to sort of be personally ruffled by any of this. But, you know, I think that the rhetoric is not healthy for anyone.
The rhetoric is pretty bad. And when you have a president of the United States talking about spies and civil war and treason and savages and all these sorts of things, it certainly gives one pause. But Nancy Cook, let me go back to you. I mean, this is a president who's still talking about being a stable genius and having made a perfect phone call that involved about $400 million that was, well, on the blind, at least, for Ukraine and under the new Zelensky leadership. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about how far and how fast this impeachment process can really go. Because if they're going to be subpoenaing, they're probably going to get stonewalling, aren't they?
Well, the Democrats are moving very quickly. They're moving quickly to gather documents. They're moving quickly to interview people. And I think one interesting thing to note is, you know, they're not just looking for information out of the White House. They're looking for information out of agencies like the State Department, the Office of Management and Budget. They're looking for information out of the Department of Justice. And so it's going to be hard for the White House to, I think, completely stonewall information out of all of these different agencies, including the White House. And I think it will be hard for them to, you know, make sure that no mid-level officials at any of these agencies testify. So I think this is a little bit more out of the control of the White House than, let's say, the Mueller investigation, which was much more focused on the president's campaign and the president's inner circle of advisors in the White House.
Well, Ukraine Special Envoy Kurt Volker testified today, as I said, and there are other testifyings coming up. What about Rudy Giuliani? He's going to be called, isn't he, Marisa?
Well, they've definitely I think that's the plan. And we know that they've subpoenaed documents for him, which are, I think, due October 15th. And I would guess, given the posturing by Pompeo and others inside the government, that we could expect a legal fight over that. I would be surprised personally if Giuliani complies, but we shall see. And I think, you know, on the State Department stuff, it's really interesting too, because you do have, it seems, you know, I think the Times or the Post had a story this week about Pompeo himself and sort of looking back at the Benghazi investigation, and of course when the script was flipped and Democrats held the White House and Republicans were in the majority in Congress. And there was, you know, big fights over that investigation and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And so it is sort of interesting on both sides, I would say, to see everybody kind of take the opposite tack now. But you do get the sense from some of the reporting coming out of D.C. that there are people within the State Department and other agencies, like the whistleblower, but beyond that, who are not happy with the way things have progressed around this issue and maybe very willing to talk. And I think the question becomes, what can Pompeo do to stop them? What can Giuliani do to ignore those subpoenas? And do we end up in a situation where there's actually obstruction charges being brought by Congress because of the fact that the Trump administration has just vowed not to, you know, cooperate in any way, shape or form?
Well, we're also, I think, going to hear, though, from Steve Linick and from Michael Atkinson. And so, as has been mentioned, other people within the State Department being called, including Mike Pompeo. I don't know that he will appear. Probably not. But Let me give out the phone number. I know there are many of you who have questions about the ongoing impeachment process, and that's what we're focusing on here, impeachment news, and we do welcome your calls. You can join us now. Toll-free number 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Talking with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown show, and Nancy Cook, White House reporter for Politico. And you can be part of the program, and we invite you again to join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. If you have questions or comments, you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email forum@kqed.org. And last comment from you, Nancy Cook, in terms of how this is all going to unfold. I know you don't have any tea leaves or crystal ball here, but what can we expect?
Well, I think that one interesting thing to watch that I'll be watching out of the White House is just how the president continues to react. He's been very angry. We saw yesterday in the press conference, and is just, you know, increasingly letting more and more of that show through. And so I'll be curious to see how he continues to react. The White House is sort of in disarray and can't figure out how to find its footing or respond to this.
There's no, excuse me, Nancy, there's no war room, really, in the West Wing. There's no apparent Trump administration strategy here, is there?
That's right. And officials are fighting over, should there be a war room? Should there not be? Who should run it? What would it look like? And meanwhile, the president is sort of taking the role as the chief strategist on this and chief communicator. And he's really sort of put himself out there and is talking to reporters a lot about it and tweeting and sort of increasingly seeming obsessed with it. And so I'll just be, you know, we're very early in this impeachment inquiry. And so if this is what he's acting like now, I'll be curious to see what this looks like in, let's say, 4 weeks.
Nancy, always good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Nancy Cook, White House reporter of Politico. You want to add something?
Oh, I just wanted to say a little plug here. But our guest tonight on Political Breakdown is going to be Chris Lehane, who, of course, helped run that war room for the Clintons during the Lewinsky impeachment scandal, but also
he was also Vice President Gore's press secretary. Yeah.
And, yes. And he is sort of known as the masters of disaster, what he and his business partner were called. And I think it's really interesting just looking back and reading the clips, you know, from the time that Clinton was being impeached and sort of the way that White House handled it is so incredibly different, right? You had a president who tried to sort of wall off himself and most of his staff from the kind of news cycle and really let a couple attack dogs, including Chris, kind of talk to the press and handle all those issues and, you know, tried to stay focused on his job as president. I mean, you couldn't find a different model than how President Trump approaches this. And I think you'd be hard pressed to find a way that you could get him to stop being personally involved. But I do think, you know, the Times has a story today about concern among Republicans that Trump is really leading this defense of himself and often seems to be sort of getting himself in more trouble than he was already in.
We've got a lot of calls. I want to get to as many as we can. But first, I want to talk with you about the PPIC report, because I think this is important for our listeners to find out about the Public Policy Institute of California under Mark Baldessari. There's a lot of questions that were asked. This was a good deal of polling. There's optimism, a lack of optimism, a diminished optimism about state direction and where it's going. There was also support for stricter gun laws. This is through California. Two-thirds want more strict gun laws. And there's also statewide concern about homelessness, which was pervasive and became actually identified as number one problem among Californians, both north and south. But what was particularly of interest here, and this is what I'd like to get your thoughts on as the political analyst of Savant, bearing that you are. I mean, we had a presidential poll essentially in California. Not only has the only local California candidate, Kamala Harris, gone down, but we have now Elizabeth Warren, a slight lead, but nevertheless in the lead.
Yeah, and this actually tracks with this is the third poll in as many weeks. So we are partnering with Change Research. We had similar results 2 weeks ago, right as voters were watching that last debate. And then the LA Times UC Berkeley IGS poll found really the same thing. Elizabeth Warren in a strong position. She's gained some ground sort of very consistently over recent months. Biden and Sanders right on her heels. And then you have Harris and actually Pete Buttigieg, who, it should be mentioned, raised an astounding $19 million in the last quarter, even though he is still polling in single digits in many places. You know, a couple of things to note here. It is still early. We have time. Over half of likely Democratic voters told PPIC that they're open to changing their vote. And so this is certainly not cemented, but I think it's good news for Warren, and it certainly tracks with what we're seeing nationally for her, which, as I said, is this sort of slow but steady increase in support, while Biden and Sanders seem to have a base but don't really seem to be growing it.
It's a big question about Sanders now, though, not only because he had some stents put in, but also because essentially the candidate momentum that he had, whatever the momentum was, is going to be slowed down tremendously now. He's out of the Iowa. He was going to get faded there and raising expectations of over $1 million. Not doing it. And there's no real explanation as to why he's not doing it.
Yeah. And I think that this is, you know, a real challenge because, I mean, let's be clear. Bernie Sanders still has very solid support. We're talking 20 to 25% in a lot of polls in California and not.
And he says he's healthy. He says
he's fine. Yeah. And I think, you know, you would be hard pressed to find somebody who campaigns harder and has more energy. But certainly that's a concern. I mean, not just because it would be a concern for any candidate to have a health problem while they're campaigning, but because he is the oldest candidate in the field. I think, though, that it is so early, and I think we learned in 2016 not to count anybody out at this point in the game. And the fact that the race remains so fluid is interesting. But I do think it seems really evident that Elizabeth Warren's surge has sort of put a dent in his ability to grow his base. And I think the other, you know, unanswered question is how much all of this talk about Ukraine and Hunter Biden is going to affect Joe Biden. I think that even though we all keep saying, and we should because it's the truth, that there is no evidence of the Bidens being involved in anything corrupt there.
It still undermines his candidacy when all this information comes out about his son getting on Burisma's board and getting $50,000 a month and having no experience and so forth. But let me read one comment here from Jesse, who's pro-impeachment. He says, we keep skirting the real issue. We have a mentally unstable man in the White House who is becoming more unhinged every day. President Trump is still focused on the 2016 election and proving he is legitimate. I hope we can impeach him before he's removed under Article 25. And here's a caller. We go to you first. Faraz, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, yes. So, Michael, you just mentioned that Adam Schiff had met the whistleblower before, but that's not what the New York Times says. It explicitly says Mr. Schiff never saw any part of the complaint or knew precisely what the whistleblower would deliver. At no point did the committee review or receive the complaint in advance. And this is quote-unquote from New York Times. So I just wanted to correct that.
Okay. I appreciate that. And we'll go to another caller, and that's John from San Francisco. John, you're on.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Please, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Michael. Great show. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps, and I was trained to defend this democracy, and I cannot believe this comic opera of the Trump presidency. And what worries most of all, is do you think that your panel think that the supporters would promote an insurrection if he was thrown out of office? Oh.
Marisa Lagos.
I don't know. I mean, look, I think that the issue right now for Republicans or the status is that they're all sticking with him because they've seen the polls and his base is still with him. But we saw just this morning Politico report that there is some softening of that support, especially among women, especially among sort of white suburban voters. And I think that, you know, we just have to sort of wait and see how this turns. But it certainly stands to reason that Trump is a special politician and unusual in many ways, but, you know, he is not immune to the political winds. And I think that if a majority of Republican congressmen, for example, and women feel like they are going to be hurt by continuing to stand by him and senators as well, that we could see things turn. But that has not happened yet. And
I think the caller was responding to Trump's Civil War tweet, though, specifically.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a sign of the times that a president is tweeting that at all, and that in some ways, I mean, I think it's pretty appalling, but it's also not that shocking. And I think that itself is troubling. This was, of course, a tweet, him quoting somebody on Fox News. And I mean, I know you've done shows and we could spend an hour talking about Fox News and their influence. I will say, though, you know, about his base and that support, there is some interesting sort of schisms happening within Fox News right now, where you do see anchors like Chris Wallace actually posing some really tough questions to Republicans, including Stephen Miller from the White House and others. And of course,
Stephen Miller keeps talking about the deep state, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, that's his line.
Well, it's probably also the president's, though. I mean, this is one of his closest advisors. The president's always believed in conspiracy theories. He still does.
Yeah. And, in a lot of ways, that's what helped get him elected. I mean, let's talk, Benghazi, the emails. I mean, these are not there's maybe a kernel of truth in some of it. But this is a way that he has found very successful to whip up his base. And I agree with the caller that it's incredibly troubling.
And if you'd like to be a caller here, you can join us toll free at 866-733-6786. If you want to weigh in, we invite you to do that at 866-733-6786. Here's Brian, who writes, I can't tell if the documents delivered yesterday are considered legitimate by the inspector general or if he is alarmed about how outrageously false they are. Are we clear yet about his motivations?
The inspector general?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to tell. And I think anybody who is in there is sort of watching their six as part of the administration because they understand where they're supposed to be. An IG, of course, is supposed to be independent. And, clearly he thought that this was troubling enough that the investigation moved forward. But I think there's still sort of questions to be answered there.
Talking with Marisa Lagos about impeachment, also about the PPIC poll that was done recently. And speaking of that, a USA Today poll was released just today. It found that 45% support impeachment with a large partisan divide. That divide goes to 74% Democrats, but just 17% of Republicans who back impeachment. And let's get another caller aboard here, and that's Jim in Oakland. Jim, you're on. Morning.
Hello, yes. I believe that Trump and his family are obviously corrupt and that they've used protracted legal processes to arrange negotiated settlements, silence the witnesses. And I would like to do something that no reputable politician could do, which is call for foreign governments to give us the dirt on Trump and his family and their corruption. Thank you. I'll take
that. All right. Well, thank you for that. This gets, again, back to Adam Schiff. Did he describe what was in the transcript as saying, I think the president has tried to pretty much seize on this, that the president was asking specific, I think he used the word asking for dirt or that phrase?
Yeah. I mean, so what happened was at the opening of this committee that he chairs, Schiff sort of summed up his reading of that Ukrainian. It's not really a transcript, right? It's an accounting of the call.
A summary.
It was a summary. It was his summary. It was an editorial summary, let's say. And because he sort of framed it in this is essentially what the president was saying, and it was not an exact quote, Trump has sort of seen that as an opening to attack Schiff and, of course, has continued to now that we know that this whistleblower went to the House Intelligence Committee. This is according to a New York Times report. And we also know that the whistleblower had first gone through the channels at the CIA, and according to this report, that the staff at the Intel committee basically said you need to get a lawyer and file a whistleblower complaint, which is the correct process. So I think at this point Trump is sort of taking any opening he can to attack people like Schiff and Pelosi and other Democrats.
Well, and Nancy Cook was telling us there's no war room that's been set up. Nevertheless, there's been a lot of delaying. How much can the administration continue to delay and just not respond to subpoenas with the main people that are being subpoenaed in this picture?
I think that these are things that may end up in a court of law, and certainly obstruction in itself, as we know from past impeachment inquiries.
That's what the Democrats are threatening.
Yeah, yeah. Can be an impeachable offense as well. And I think that it's hard. We should take a step back. I mean, it's been like, what, a week and a half? I mean, this is all happening very fast. So it's not crazy that these fights haven't sort of completely played out.
There's an irony here, though. I keep thinking about the Mueller report. I keep thinking about Stormy Daniels. And a lot of citizens may say, well, foreign government, who knows what really is behind this? And do we really have the full picture and so forth? Not just Republicans. I mean, independents are kind of polling in a different way there, too.
Well, we have seen some changes, and I don't think we have a ton of good polling since, a lot of this, like, for example, the PPIC poll was actually in the field as a lot of this broke. And I talked to Mark Baldessari, the CEO, about it, and he said we didn't see a huge change among those sort of partisan entrenchment that you mentioned earlier, where you have a majority of Republicans really defending the president and supporting him still. But I think that, things could change, and Change Research, who we're partnering with here at KQED, did put out a poll in some of those congressional districts where, Trump won, but then Democrats retook them last year. And they did find that there was, among those types of swing voters, some softening here. So I do think, this story has not played out entirely.
Talking with Marisa Lagos, and a listener writes, the media needs to stop repeating the details of President Trump's accusations against Joe Biden. They are unsubstantiated, and the media should not keep adding to the smear campaign. And here's Tana. You're on the air with us. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. My question is, what recourse does the House have if the Trump administration just wants to obstruct everything and block everything? Do they have to go through lower courts before they get to the Supreme Court? What can they do?
Let's go to you, Marisa.
That is a very good question. I believe they would have to file something in federal court, but
I think that's right.
Not an expert in this, and I know that we did see during the Obama administration some of these fights play out, and really what the Obama administration did, I think, with that Fast and the Furious scandal and Eric Holder, was sort of just wait it out. If you delay these things long enough, sometimes you just leave office.
Let me thank you for the call. That was Tana, and this is Revy. Revy, join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I'm just curious, you know, global world like today, there's a lot of work officials do outside. How do you properly find out what corruption or any other issues or favors that they've done there? Constitutional, legal, proper way to find out?
Well, you got about, what, Marisa, six committees in the Congress investigating those questions right now as we speak?
At least six. You know, I think that I actually think this question goes to the previous statement, too, which is the person who brought up Biden and that we in the media should stop repeating these things. I mean, I think that's a decent point. It is a hard one to make because you have to tell the totality of these stories. But I think Trump has been on a really good job of muddying the waters, whether it be this or other situations with Hillary Clinton, whether, you know, he is sort of a master of that. And I think that it does make it confusing for the public. And we're doing our best here in the media to try to sort that out. And we'll be bringing all the information to you about those investigations.
Marisa, always good to have you. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown. And I want to remind you who's behind the scenes here. KQED Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauberg, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Ariana Prell. And we get support from Ariana Prell, excuse me. We get support from Amanda Font, and our interns are Caroline Smith and Sam Klein Markman. Executive editor is Ethan Lindsay, and our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. And thank you for being a part of the program. I'm Michael Kresge.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.